It has been 102 very long, trying days, but Rockets basketball is back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Harden My Take, the number one podcast on the DreamShake.com, home of all things Houston Rockets on SBNation.com. Jeremy Brenner here, and today we are kicking off Rockets 2020-2021 basketball today, and we don't have Michael Brown on the show. He has the day off, but we want to introduce you to one of our newest contributors over at the Dream Shake, Mr. Ray Lucas. Ray, so happy to have you on the podcast. And how you doing, man?
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm doing good. Just been looking at all stuff NBA related. My day is going pretty good because I've seen that the NBA is interested in adding teams, and that's good for me being from Seattle because that's something I've wanted for a long time.
Yeah. We are going from coast to coast. You're out on the West Coast. I'm out on the East Coast, and we're covering a team right in the middle, these Houston Rockets, who have had one of the wildest off seasons probably in recent memory. I can't think of another team, man, that has had that this, you know, just hectic of an offseason. I just, like, what is the one thing that sticks out to you from this offseason?
Probably just the fact that a big reason why both Harden and Westbrook wanted change was because of, like, the culture within the team. And it seems like there's been an effort to change that, but they still want out. So I think that's been something that's really stood out because it's a little – confusing, but yeah.
I like that you use the word culture because it appears that that is going to be like kind of the theme of this season, right? We got new coach, new GM, potentially a new focal point in the offense, whether or not James Harden is going to stay or go. And I think, you know, this season it's very difficult to predict what actually is going to happen, because we really don't know what the team's going to look like. And, you know, whether it be with Harden, without Harden, how long will the team have Harden? You know, it seems like any day now we're looking for, like, I just got a notification on my phone and I was like, is this it? Is this the one? Is that the Woj bomb that I've been, you know, looking for the past month and a half? But it's just, let's just try to I feel like everyone tries to speculate. And especially with this report that came out yesterday about Harden throwing a ball in the direction of, you know, my favorite Rocket of all time, Jayshon Tate. We should change this podcast to Jayshon Tate, My Take, or something like that. I don't know. But, like, Ray, we talked a little bit about this before the show, but what do you make of that report or the incident or whatever we're going to call it?
I think it was fishing for something more than anything. I think there's occurrences all the time that we don't hear about where players kind of players kind of clash in practice, especially because that's the time where you do it. I think it's probably a thing of frustration. It probably is a thing about, like, the ongoing trade talks, but I don't know if it's necessarily as big of a deal as it's being made out to be. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, part of a fan, part of being a fan of a team, at least a true fan, is someone that sticks to your team regardless of anything that's going on. And I think that us Red Nation folk have kind of really learned the real meaning of that in this offseason. You know, we haven't necessarily been losing all that much, but it feels like every single day we need to come to the defense of the Rockets. And it's just so difficult day in, day out to do that. And that, I think, has just been, you know, what's been the most stressful, at least for me, this offseason, is just having to come to the defense of a team that, you know, doesn't deserve a whole lot of it. Look, I'm not going to say that James Harden was right or wrong in what he did or if that thing was true or not, but I think you're right. I think that, you know, the media thrives off of chaos, right? Yeah. They want to tell stories that are chaotic because that is what people want to hear. Honestly, people would much rather see a drama than a smooth sail, a smooth sailing ship. People care. They want to see the train crash. They want to see the ship sink. They want to see hell, basically. That's why the Spurs are so underrated, is because the Spurs never had any of that. And that's, and they still are probably the best team of the 2000s next to those Lakers in 2000, 2000, and, the early 2000s. But I just think that story with Harden, it kind of contributes to the whole chaos, the narrative that people are looking for when it comes to Harden. And it's just, it's so frustrating because, I mean, Ray, I'm sure you've been kind of in this group, but we've defended Harden for so long. And just to see all of, like, the haters kind of thrive off of this, it's disappointing.
Yeah, definitely. I think just going on social media, a lot of people have been saying, like, James Harden is probably, at this point now, one of the more underrated players in the league, just because people, they'll call him boring to watch, but they won't appreciate what really goes into his game and what he does. And if he gets moved from the Rockets to, let's say, a team like Brooklyn, overnight people will start to appreciate him more, just because he's with a lot more talent and he'll be on higher stages, going deeper into the playoffs and things like that. So it's going to be interesting to watch the narrative about him change.
Yeah, and honestly, the narrative about Harden, ultimately, the next step is very crucial, not just for the Rockets, but for Harden as well. Because where he goes, he's going to be continued to be looked under the microscope, I feel. Similar to how Jimmy Butler was kind of the same way, and Anthony Davis. But the difference between those two players is they eventually found better or greener grasses. They found opportunity to win. They improved in their second home or their third home, or their fourth home in the case of Jimmy Butler. But needless to say, they improved after they left their original home. And will Harden be in that same boat? Now, the Rockets have had, there's a lot of pressure on this move. Wherever the Rockets decide to go, they have a major fork in the road, and there has been so many different ways in which this can go. They can ride it out with Harden this year. They can stop and deal him now, because the deadline, I guess, for all we know, he could be traded before this podcast even gets released. But do you think it's worth keeping Harden? And if so, for how long?
I'd say it's worth keeping him up until around the trade deadline, because at that point, I think it's in March.
Yeah, March 25th is the trade deadline this year, about 3 months away.
Mm-hmm. And so at that point, teams will kind of know if they need to get more desperate, because as every fan of an NBA team knows, the window to win a championship is so small. Mm-hmm. And you want to make that move that puts you in the best position to do so. And I don't think a team is desperate enough right now to give up a whole bunch for James Harden. Mm-hmm. But if, let's say, Philadelphia starts to slip a little bit and they see Brooklyn and they see Milwaukee and they see Boston really running out in front of the Eastern Conference, then maybe their stance will change about a Ben Simmons deal, who I think is probably the best player that they can get for him, along with some other assets. It's going to take more than just Ben Simmons. But, yeah, I think up until the deadline is probably their best bet.
That's a good point that you bring up, in that, teams right now, what's so frustrating about it is they're like, oh, why would we trade, five first-round picks for James Harden when you have Drew Holiday over here going for three? All respect to Drew Holiday. That dude is a great NBA player. Maybe very good NBA player, I should say. Not great, but Harden is on a different level than Drew Holiday. I don't think that's up for debate.
Yeah.
So to say that, you know, you wouldn't give up two more firsts in, it's just kind of, you know, odd. And I know that Drew Holiday didn't go for like a young star like the Rockets are looking for, but the package that Drew Holiday went for, and I'm using that as an example because he was probably the highest profile player traded this offseason.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm looking, that's kind of what you're looking at right now is as the kind of comparison. And if you look at the Anthony Davis trade, that's another, like Anthony Davis was never going to go back to the Pelicans. That was never a question. So, and to the same point, Harden's kind of in that same boat. Harden has made it clear he's not coming back to the Rockets in 2 years when his contract's up. Now, can that change? Very, very unlikely that it will, but the Rockets can get a type of package that resembles that. And look, Brandon Ingram is great. Brandon Ingram's an all-star, but you got to look for a guy that's even better. And that's why Ben Simmons does make a lot of sense. But also, when you're dealing with Philly, you're dealing with Daryl Morey, who knows how – you know how much he wants him. You know how much he values him. So you're going to ask for the right value. And Daryl Morey's going to try to pull every trick out of his bag that we are all very aware of and figure that out too. Now, I like your thought process, Ray, about the deadline, just because that is when teams will start to get a little more desperate. But you also have to look at the Rockets here, for example. Like, if the Rockets get to the deadline and they are in contention, they're in the thick of things in the West, you look at the Rockets and you say, well, is it right for the Rockets to deal him? Because, honestly, if the Rockets have James Harden, at least through the first 3 months of the season, I think the Rockets can be right there in the West for a playoff spot, for a chance to make some kind of deep run, whether it be the second round or the finals. To me, I think that presents a very complicated situation, catch-22. But, Ray, what about this has not been a catch-22 situation?
Say that last part again.
What about this has not been, you know, a catch 22 where it's been like, you know, there's been totally, there's always pros and cons to every single move. And there's so many of them and that's why this move is so, it's so key. What they do here with Harden, the timing of the move has to be right. The package in return has to be right. The destination has to be right. There's so many things that have to go the right way here in order for it to work. It's a lot of pressure for Rafael Stone.
Yeah, so I think a big thing for the Rockets is, like you were saying, if they get to the deadline and they're in contention, they're not going to want to move on from him, because if you're the Rockets and you look at the moves that you made this offseason, there's no doubt that you improved your roster from the previous season. And in the previous season, you lost to the team that went on to win the NBA championship. Like, it's not like you lost to Denver or the Jazz or anyone like that. You lost to the team that won it. And a big thing has been, like, running it back and trying it again. And this wouldn't necessarily be trying it again, because they changed some things. It'd be like taking a whole new approach to it. And so if I was Rockets personally, I wouldn't want to move him, which is why it's like it becomes so conflicted, because you don't want to move him, but you don't want to wait too long and then get nothing for him. And so I think that's probably been the biggest delay out of everything.
And that's what's going to be so key in these first couple of weeks too, because there's a lot of chatter about how, oh, he'll be gone by January 1st. Like Channing Frye said that on NBA TV a couple days ago, where he's going to get dealt like pretty early in the season, kind of like how Jimmy Butler was. But then you also have to keep in mind that his value might fluctuate. You never know. He could go out tonight, you know, God forbid, hope this doesn't happen, but, you know, tears Achilles, because apparently that's kind of like, you know, a contagious disease on this team with so many guys. It's four guys in the last 2 years that have turned their Achilles. But hopefully that doesn't happen. Never want to wish an injury on anyone. But, like, and if that happens, then the Rockets have absolutely no leverage at all. And then – so you always run that risk. I mean, I know Harden stayed relatively, you know, pretty healthy for his 8+ years here. But I don't know. Just, I think the Rockets just, they have to make them, they have to make a move and stick by it. And
yeah,
if it goes south, if the move they make is not the right move, I mean, I'm not going to say like DeAndre Hopkins-esque poorly, but if it does, at least they have the cushion from around this team that can resemble somewhat of a team that's going to be competitive. Not necessarily contender, but that's competitive. And that's what I like about this offseason. That's been the one good thing about this offseason is they've built a competitive roster around James Harden so that when they eventually do make this move, whether it be today, tomorrow, March 25th, or next offseason or never, they have the right pieces in mind. So let's kind of pivot away from James Harden a little bit. Let's talk about the rest of this team, the team that we know is going to be part of this upcoming season. What is your favorite new piece on this team? And it can be someone that they brought in. It can be a new role for a guy like Eric Gordon, who should get, I think looks, his outlook is a lot better in this type of offense than in Mike D'Antoni's offense. What new wrinkle about this team, Ray, excites you the most?
I think the easy answer would probably be Christian Wood, but I think I'll go with John Wall just because his ability to facilitate is such a big thing for this team. Like, you see the off-ball movement that they had in the preseason. There were some clips that went around Twitter that really emphasized that is the movement, the screens, all that. It just looked really smooth and really fluid. And the fact that he looks really quick as well, quicker than I was expecting, to be honest, he looks really good. And his three-point shot looks like he really put a lot of work in with that. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people just based off how well he can still play.
We're going to get a brand new John Wall than any of us are really considering. Honestly, it still really hasn't hit that John Wall is part of this team because the John Wall that I know, and I know the John Wall you know best, Ray, is the one that was at Kentucky. And that Kentucky team was like a pearl. That team was so exciting to watch. It was really like the first, I guess, if you want to call it the one and done era that John Calipari had at Kentucky. But that team, I remember, was just such an exciting team. And John Wall was the biggest reason why. He facilitated the offense in a way that very few could. And he was just – and I think just Washington going there, I mean, he had a very – he brought Washington, I think, as far as he could. And, you know, he was loyal to D.C., he signed the long-term deals. He stayed there as long as he could. And ultimately, you know, it's just the way that the NBA is built. Like, John Wall had to go through, like, the Cleveland years with LeBron. He had to go through the Miami years with LeBron. Let me look at John Wall in, like, the playoffs. Because they made a couple of postseason runs into the second round. And that was really the furthest that he was able to take that team. But those were his teams. Those weren't Brad Beal's teams. Those were – like 2017, he went to the second round. He was averaging 27 a game in the 2017 playoffs. That's, I mean, it's pretty impressive. He took the Celtics, who were the number one seed that year, to seven games. But, I mean, John Wall, I think I like what you said about him, right? I think that he's got a lot of pieces in his game that we haven't really been accustomed to seeing.
Yeah,
he's adapted his game real well.
I think those injuries, when they're leg injuries, I think they really give you a chance to work on your shooting because what else do you have to do? Like, if you look at DeMarcus Cousins, like, yeah, he could shoot, but the way he's been shooting in the preseason has kind of stood out. It's like, oh, he can, like, shoot now. Yeah. It's an improved jump shot.
Him and, too. I mean, he's also had two brutal, you know, lower body injuries.
Yeah. I'm surprised he's come back as good. I thought he was going to be, like, a little bit more slow, but he's really looking good for someone who went through those injuries.
Yeah. So, already, we've mentioned Christian Wood, who was the easy answer, because obviously him. But then there's also John Wall. There's also DeMarcus Cousins. But I kind of want to talk about John Wall – or, no, not John Wall, but Christian Wood versus DeMarcus Cousins. Now, the team obviously signed Christian Wood to be their guy, and they kind of took DeMarcus Cousins as a, you know, they took him on a one-year non-guaranteed contract. They were very low risk, high reward with him. Mm-hmm. But from what we've seen so far, it looks like DeMarcus Cousins is going to have a role on this team. However, Steven Silas has also said that Christian Wood is a five, and you're, it's like, do you think we're going to see lineups? I know, like, Steven Silas hasn't really alluded to it, but how do you feel about Wood and Cousins sharing the floor? Do you think that they have the ability to do that, or do you think it's only going to be a case of when one of them can really play?
I think it depends on the matchup. I don't think it's a every night type of thing, but when you're going against a team that's a little bit smaller, obviously no one's going to be as small as the Rockets were last year, but just a team that lacks size a little bit in the interior, if you throw both of those guys in, they both have the ability to play outside. I think it could work. I don't know if I'd use it as a starting lineup ever, but just those spurts where maybe you're getting out-rebounded, maybe a team's just scoring at will in the paint. Like against the Lakers, Lakers are really big. They have a lot of guys who are down there in the paint. That lineup will probably help a whole lot more than anything else they could throw at them.
Yeah, that's kind of what the reason why the Rockets kind of got pushed out of the playoffs is the Lakers kind of exposed the fact that they were small. And there was a point, though, where the Rockets were kind of forcing the Lakers to play small.
Yeah.
But the thing with the Lakers is they had the ability to play both big and small.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what the Rockets have the ability to do as well. I think that you're going to see Christian Wood, who, you know, he's gotten a lot of comparisons to Kristaps Porzingis in that offense. Kaylee Griffin brought it up on the last episode. We had, you know, Steven Silas kind of bring up Kristaps in that comparison as well. And Kristaps plays the four a lot in that Mavs offense. He also plays some five, but, you know, he kind of flips between the four and the five. So, I mean, I personally don't like the idea of Wall and Cousins on the floor unless Cousins is more of, honestly, if he's more of like a four, if Cousins is more like the four and Wall and Wood is more like the five, because you get Cousins in that, like, in that spot that he likes to shoot at the three-point line, you can use him like as just a real big, you know, power forward almost. And you can, it's going to be difficult to play like a, you don't want to play like a five out with both those guys on the floor, but you have the ability to do that, I think, because of the way that Cousins has kind of morphed his game into being, you know, morphed into a jump shot that he's created, a three-point shot that he's, you know, built in his repertoire. And then you have Wood, who can play the pick and roll, play the pick and pop, drive if he needs to. I think you have the ability to put both those guys on the floor, but like you said, right, it's just, I personally think it's best if you just put one out there, because that's going to give you more flexibility with your other four guys. And to be honest, more defense. Like,
yeah,
it's going to be hard to see other lineups. Like, you mentioned the Lakers. That's probably the one example where they put out AD and Gasol, or AD and Montrezl Harrell. But, like, Montrezl Harrell, if they play AD and Montrezl Harrell, Montrezl Harrell can morph into, like, kind of like the four, like kind of how he played in Houston.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, Dallas. Like, Dallas could play, like, you know, Porzingis at the four and, you know, Dwight Powell at the five. Powell can play more like the four. But so ultimately, for me, like, it's looking like, I know we've only seen him one game, but Christian Wood looks like the future of the team.
Yeah, definitely.
So that kind of limits, unfortunately, DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, and I think as much as that sucks because of how good he's looked in the preseason. Sorry, my dogs. As good as he's looked in the preseason, with him coming off of injuries, he probably won't play too many back-to-backs. Probably won't play super heavy minutes, which will let Wood thrive. So I think it's – we want to see him a lot, but he just might not be ready. So that's going to let Wood grow a lot more because he's not going to be fighting for those minutes with Cousins since he'll be on, like, a minutes restriction.
Yeah, I definitely think a lot of guys are going to be on minutes restrictions. You have, obviously, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, David Nwaba, all three of those guys coming off of major injuries. And also the fact that the Rockets on offense, you know, last year, a lot of the guys were kind of just stagnant. They were kind of just standing in the corner, or they're standing in their spot, and they kind of let Harden do his thing or Westbrook do his thing.
Yeah.
But this offense requires a lot more movement out of everyone, not just the ball handler, not just the point guard, but everyone has to be moving constantly on offense and defense. So that is going to maneuver and create opportunity. Like, it's going to limit minutes from guys. Like, people aren't going to be able to run 35, 40 minutes. PJ Tucker, bless him, at, you know, 35 years old, is not going to be able to play, you know, 30 or so minutes a night. And in the regular season, if you want him to be at his A game come postseason time, assuming he's still on the roster, which, you know, hopefully he is, because he could be extremely valuable in the postseason. But ultimately, that's what this team is going to be so different from others. I think with Mike D'Antoni, it was very easy to be accustomed to this, you know, nine guys play and that's it. Nobody else, you don't get a shot. And 8 and 9, you're playing 5 minutes at best. But I think we could see potential for 10, 11 guys a night playing ball. And then when you have guys like John Wall, like DeMarcus Cousins, that sit out that back-to-back, or they take a day off for you know, back spasms or something. You know, and I say that loosely because of the rule with the whole resting players and whatnot. But you're going to see guys like this roster, 1 through 15, is going to be super important, every single guy.
I think especially with a shortened season.
Yeah.
Because you have those games where you're going to play a team two times in 2 or 3 nights. Mm-hmm. And those guys who are deep in the bench, if they didn't play too much the first game but you lost, they might see action in the second game, because it's going to – if anything, we've seen it's going to be about adjustments this year, which hasn't been a thing of the past, but –
but it's a thing maybe. Of now, for the future.
Yeah, it's like adjustments. That's a big thing. But it's just, you look at if they play, let's say, the Spurs, and they lose that first game by 10, 15 points, then the coaching staff is going to look and they're going to say, well, what can we do different? Because you're not going to go and roll out the same unit that you just ran and try to attack them with the same game plan, which also I think prepares for the playoffs really well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it will be a deep rotation. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like 11 guys.
Mm-hmm. So which of those guys, I guess, in that 10, 11, 12 range, are you looking forward to seeing play this season and possibly carve out a bigger role than they had in the past?
I think McLemore. Yes, I think –
the right answer. The yeah. Absolute. You've won the $1 million. Congratulations. That is the absolute number one correct answer.
Thank you. Yeah, I think his role, like, he can shoot the ball really well, for one. He's an athletic player. And it's a lot of times effort defensively is key. Like, he doesn't necessarily have the size of a lockdown defender. Mm-hmm. But if the effort's there, then you're going to get stops regardless, because – you're not going to guard a Kevin Durant or someone every time down the floor. And I think that's one thing that small ball helped with leading into this year, is that each possession in the playoffs, they had to give full effort on defense, because chances are when you're so small, the team's going to score anyways. Mm-hmm. But you're doing your very best to stop them. And they did have a lot of stops in the postseason. Just as it went on, their weaknesses got exploited. But I think moving forward now, they had this, like, that's the standard on defense, is you did it last season, so you could do it again this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the part of the defense that I think is a benefit from the previous season. But also, there's less switching. And, you know, the Rockets defense last year, switch everything. Uh-huh. And it works. If you put the right players in that have the capability of doing that, it works. Unfortunately for a guy like Ben McLemore, the key to beating a thing like that is you get a guy like Ben McLemore who's not the greatest defender, and you just simply get the mismatch, you put LeBron on him, and LeBron's going to score on you because LeBron's LeBron, and mm-hmm. you know, Ben McLemore, bless his soul, is not going to get that stop. But in his fairness, you know, not many guys are going to get that stop on LeBron, especially mm-hmm. Bubble LeBron.
Yeah.
Bubble Bron. But I just – this so that will help guys like Ben McLemore. Also, the defensive guys that they brought in, like Sterling Brown, John Wall, like David Nwaba, those are better defenders. And you know, DeMarcus Cousins, he's a better defender for like they have some real defensive stalwarts on this team. They could put out like if they need a stop, like let's say final possession of the game. You know, you're up one, you need to stop. You can put out like John Wall, Sterling Brown, David Nwaba, PJ Tucker, and you know, Christian Wood or DeMarcus Cousins. Or you can put out Christian Wood and DeMarcus Cousins, and you put like it's gonna be difficult to get a bucket on that team.
Yeah, you could live with if they score, they score, but it's gonna be a contested shot.
Exactly. And look, the Rockets got beat on what is it, like two or three buzzer beaters last year?
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, but I mean, not that mattered, you know, at the end of the day, but, mm-hmm. You know, I'm really looking forward to this defensive Jayshon Tate too. That's also someone, okay. Like Jayshon Tate, like we've been saying it a lot lately, but I'm so excited for Jayshon Tate. Like, I think he's going to get legit minutes. I think that was proven in the first preseason game when he got the start over. You know, I know PJ wasn't there, and PJ will start at the four, you would think, as long as he's here. And, you know, I think Jayshon Tate also has a role on this team. They really like him. Will Weaver, you know, who coached him in Sydney, he knows his weaknesses in and out. They really like him. And, you know, they wouldn't have, I think, gotten rid of Gerald Green if they didn't like him. They signed him to a four-year contract, too. So, like, they really like Jayshon Tate. I think he's going to be the biggest surprise this season to most of the NBA because not a whole lot of people know who he is. And that I think is a good thing because it's kind of like a secret weapon in a way. Right. I think,
yeah,
you know, and you know, he's going to be the next namesake of the podcast. Like he's got a real good shot. I think, you know, pardon my Tate. That could be it. That could be the next name of the podcast, the J Train. Yeah. I'm the conductor of the J Train, so you know that. I could go on for hours about Jayshon Tate, but I'm gonna stop myself while I'm ahead. But let's kind of talk about the top of this wing rotation. Okay, we talked about a lot about the lower guys, but you know, Eric Gordon, he has stated in the offseason about how he was displeased with his ever so changing role in the offense. And Steven Silas has addressed that. He said that players know that players are best that play their best when they know what's coming. Those are his words. And Eric Gordon said he's coming off the bench and that he's okay with it as long as it stays consistent and as long as it's what's best for the team and that they win. What do you think about Eric Gordon coming off the bench? And also, I guess, assuming that means Daniel House, at least at the beginning of the season, will start at the three.
Yeah, so I think Eric Gordon, his best opportunity comes from coming off the bench because he doesn't have to worry about shared reps offensively with John Wall for James Harden for however long he's here. And then, obviously, Christian Wood is a scorer. So he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot too. But if you bring in Eric Gordon, he could kind of be that player where he runs the bench unit and the scoring goes through him. And with him, he's mainly a scorer. And usually those guys who are mainly scorers, they really thrive in that six-man role because they come in and give you a big burst offensively off the bench. So I think that's probably what suits him best. But going back to what you were just saying about Jayshon Tate, I think the excitement for him is, like you said, like a secret weapon because obviously the most like famous moment from this podcast came from Alex Caruso. And he's what the Lakers, he's their secret weapon. Their, I mean, not so much a secret anymore. And if you look at Alex Caruso, like the frustration in the playoffs that a lot of people had was the fact that he's scoring so many points, because that's not necessarily what he's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But if he scores 16, 18 points, then chances are the Lakers are going to win. And so I think if Jason Tate can become that, where you come in, you make winning plays, but then if you come in and score 18, chances are that's a victory. I think that can be really big. I think every contender needs that guy, or every team really needs that guy that can come and give that energy and that burst.
That's a very good point. I don't know if we're going to see a whole lot of 18-point games out of Jason Tate. I think the minutes will be a big reason why, but also I like his intrigue more on the defensive end. The fact that he's just 6'4", but plays – he's sized like a guard, but plays like a forward and can play – and can guard 1 through 5.
Mm-hmm.
Those – like – any kind of any time you get a guy like that, you're gonna excite like that. Those are the kind of guys that you just want to see more of, and that's why I'm so excited about Jason Tate. Is just that he's like a utility guy. Like, I guess if I can use a Houston example, like Marwin Gonzalez for the Astros when he was here with the when he was here as the the championship team, the 2017 team. You know, Marwin Gonzalez was beloved in Houston because the dude could play any position, and the dude was kind of just, you know, not the guy you expected to, you know, show out, but he did. He performed. He hit a home run in the World Series. Like, he was the guy that the Astros needed in order to win that championship. So you need guys like that who will put out, play wherever you play them, and just give it everything they have. And you know, he also has something to prove, too. That's another thing about this team that everybody is doubting this team. Everyone is doubting the Rockets right now. The Rockets, they have such low expectations placed upon them because of the, you know, all the hell that they've been through this offseason. But this team, every single person has something to prove. It almost feels like Houston versus the world. John Wall has something to prove. DeMarcus Cousins has something to prove. Nwaba, something to prove. Jason Tate, something to prove. PJ Tucker, James Harden, Eric Gordon. Every single person on this team has a chip on their shoulder, has something that's pushing them to be better, because so many guys have counted them out. Christian Wood as well, a guy that went undrafted, been a 6 teams in 5 years, and now he's finally got a strong enough contract and the role and the ability to be a star. And nobody pegged him as that coming out of college. So that is, I think, what I like the most about this team, is that there's so many guys that are playing for something, that are playing with a chip on their shoulder. Ben McLemore, too. There's just so many guys that, you know, have something to prove. And I think that's when you get your best basketball. And I think that's why the Rockets did as well as they did last year, is because, you know, they had something to prove. I guess let's try to pivot now. But Daniel House, also another guy with something to prove. Yeah. And I'll be the first to say that I was not happy with Daniel House after the bubble. I was very, very frustrated. And, you know, for those of you that have been listening for the last couple of months, know how frustrated I've been. And I was surprised to find out that he would be on the roster still. But, you know, I'm willing to give him a new season, new slate. As long as he's performing and playing his best basketball, you know, that's what matters to me. But, Ray, I want to hear your thoughts on Daniel House. I haven't heard a whole lot about that. But what do you think about Daniel House being the starting three on this team, and what he has to offer this season?
I was surprised that he was on the team as well, too. Usually those mistakes, there's not much room for them. Like, if you just look at Dwayne Haskins with the Washington football team, we'll see what happens there. He probably wouldn't get cut or anything, but a trade in the offseason wouldn't be all that surprising. just because of putting your team at risk during a pandemic. But I think him starting at the three is a really good spot for him because he's able to just spot up and shoot, and he doesn't necessarily have to worry about creating. And he's shown that, like, he can get to the basket and finish. He usually gets up and tries to throw down a crazy dunk. Mm-hmm. And it looks like he's transitioning to layups a little more. So that's nice because those are a little more high percentage. But I think him at the three is a really good fit because I think defensively he's shown that he's capable. And he could really be a 3-and-D player. Usually those guys have a little more size, like more of a traditional wing, but this isn't necessarily a traditional NBA anymore. So I think he could thrive at that three spot. I'd rather see him in the starting lineup and Gordon coming off the bench.
Daniel House, he can share the floor with guys like James Harden, John Wall, and they have guys that have more creator-like tendencies. So I think that fit is better. You get strong production off the bench. You know, last year, I think the Rockets were like 28th in bench scoring. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that Eric Gordon was hurt for a lot of the year. And after Eric Gordon, their team really didn't have much else. But now you have Eric Gordon on the bench, hopefully healthy for the season. You have DeMarcus Cousins who can, you know, who you're going to go to often when he's on the floor. He's a guy that, you know, can post up, can go for three. He can do a whole lot on, you know, and then there's Ben McLemore, shooters that, you know, are looking, you know, shooters that can space the floor, like him, PJ Tucker, PJ Tucker's going to be in the starting lineup, but he'll be seen in a lot of bench lineups, I guess. And even, like, you know, one guy that we haven't really discussed yet, but I kind of just want to briefly mention is Mason Jones. Mm-hmm. Especially if the Rockets make a trade for a guy like Pascal Siakam, because I know he's been rumored in potential package. If they go out and got like Pascal Siakam, that's going to really desperately add a need for a guard. And I think that the reason why, and look, Chris Clemens obviously went down, and that's, you know, very unfortunate. But the team also had Jerian Grant. And the team could have kept Jerian Grant, but they chose not to. So really, the only backup that the team has is Mason Jones. And I don't think you're going to see a lot of him in this early part of the season because I do think, you know, the rules for the two-way guys this year is a little bit different. It actually benefits the two-way players a little more. I hope they kind of keep this for the future. But they're allowed to play in 50 games out of 72. So that means we could see a lot of Mason Jones. I think that we're more likely to see him towards the end of the season. Like, I think games in which John Wall is for sure there, like, we might see Mason Jones take one of those games to sit out. But I think he could make an impact too, especially if the team is kind of, you know, thin at the guard position. What do you think?
Yeah, I could see him getting a big role because – obviously, once James Harden leaves, there's a lot of spots that are open, and it really depends on the haul that comes back more than anything. If you get, like you were saying with Toronto, I'm guessing they'd get Siakam. I could see Norman Powell, and then the rest kind of have to figure it out. But I could definitely see him getting more reps, especially because if a team's getting younger, they really want to get their young talent involved. Like, you don't want to have a young player just rotting away on the bench and then he develops and then he turns into another team's treasure because he had a talent that never really was tapped into. But the fact that he got minutes in the preseason, I think, is promising. The fact that he's still on the roster is promising because we've seen guys like Jerian Grant get waived. Gerald Green, obviously, even though he's a vet. Kenny Wooten, I think, a week ago. Mm-hmm. So I think he definitely has a role. It just might take a little bit until they tap into that. I think it'll be interesting, though.
Yeah. So we're about to pull this J train into the station. But before we go, let's talk about tonight's game. Oklahoma City, a team that the Rockets are very familiar with, although it's going to be a team that looks – a little bit different than the one they saw in the bubble. No Chris Paul, obviously. So you would think that this is a game that the Rockets should win. But what is one key, Ray, that you're looking to see tonight? What are you keeping your eye on tonight that you want to see in this first game?
I think just seeing how they approach their game. Like, obviously, Oklahoma is a team that they should beat. And it's the opening night of the season, so you shouldn't be overlooking anyone. But I want to see the mindset that the team has coming into the game. Because, like you said, they're a team with a lot to prove. And we'll see that pretty quickly, because teams with a lot to prove and teams with a chip on their shoulder, they don't overlook other teams because they're being overlooked themselves. So I think just watching how they come out, how they communicate, just the adjustments they make throughout the game, I think it will be really telling, maybe not for how the season will go, but just where the team is at mentally and how they're going to approach each game.
Right. Now, this West is a gauntlet. That I think that, like, I've been kind of writing down all the teams and trying to see where they're going to play in the playoffs. There's a lot of teams with playoff hopes. And, you know, with a shortened season, there's only so many time. There's only so much room for error. And when you get a game like the Thunder, you need to win. I don't care if it's game one. I don't care if it's game 72. You need to go out and take care of business, because there's not going to be a whole lot of games where you can do something like that. If you look at the schedule after the Thunder, you have, you know, Blazers on the road on Saturday night, and then you have the Nuggets on Monday night. Those are two games that the Rockets won't be favored in. I'll tell you that right now. But so you're looking at, and then, you know, after that, you got, you know, the Mavericks in a week or so. You got the Pacers. That's not going to be an easy game. You got the Lakers in early January. Like, there's not a whole lot of gimme games, especially this year and especially right now. You know, it's going to come down to teams that can take care of business when they need to and teams that stay healthy. That's honestly how it's going to be. And, you know, the Rockets need to come out tonight and, you know, take care of business, because if they don't, that's like, it's kind of reminiscent of, do you remember a few years back, it was 2015 when they played the Nuggets on their first night, Ray? They were playing the Nuggets. Ty Lawson was just signed. It was the year after they went to the Western Conference Finals, and they got blown out by 20 on opening night at home. And that set up, you know, what was to be a long season. Now, I'm not going to say this game, you know, whether or not they win is going to dictate how the rest of the season goes. But like you said, the approach and how they take this game is going to be important, and how they go about tonight could be a sign of what's to come. So I think this is a good place to park the rocket ship for now. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Harden My Take. At least that's the name for now. We'll see as the season goes along. But as the season goes along, the Dream Shake podcast team, me, Michael Brown, and of course my co-pilot today, Mr. Ray Lucas, we will bring the content to you periodically, probably a lot more this season than we have in years past. We're really excited about the team that we've built here for this season. Ray, Rookie Ray, love to have you on the podcast, sir. Feel free to drop your Twitter handle below and your final thoughts.
Thank you for having me, for starters. I had a great time. This has been a fun experience. I look forward to doing it again. The final thing I'd say is, just for Rocket fans who are a bit unsure at Ben Simmons, the way I look at him is, yeah, there's some holes offensively, like he can't shoot. But if you look at floors and ceilings, his ceiling, we don't necessarily know. If he gets a jump shot, he's going to be a very great player for a long time. But right now his floor is a two-way player who can win Defensive Player of the Year, just depending on how his season goes. And he's really hard to stop on the drive, along with his ability to facilitate and playmake. So I'd say take another look at Ben Simmons, take a longer look at Ben Simmons, and you might just warm up to the idea of him. And that's all I got.
Well said, well said. And whenever this Harden trade does happen, we will be here at Harden My Take for the final Harden My Take episode, I guess, for the emergency trade podcast. Whenever that may be, it might be later today. It might be tomorrow. It might be a few weeks from now. It might be March 25th, and it might be never. But we'll be here. We'll be here, and we'll also be at thedreamshake.com. Move all things Houston Rockets on SBNation.com. You can follow the Dream Shake on Twitter at DreamShakeSBN. You can also follow the new Harden My Take Twitter account at Harden My Take on Twitter. So be sure to throw that a follow and help us grow our following on Twitter. You can also check out the Dream Shake on Facebook if you're over there. Hit us, give us a like and a thumbs up over there. And be sure not to miss a single episode of the Harden My Take podcast by subscribing and downloading the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast. And until next time, go Rockets!